The Inside Transportation Podcast is sponsored by Ford Motor Company. Built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy, AI to machine learning, Ford has one simple goal: to improve mobility for its customers. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their corporate efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. The Inside Transportation Podcast is also sponsored by Fenwick & West. Fenwick & West is one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and transportation. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at fenwick.com. That's F-E-N-W-I-C-K.com. Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Inside Transportation Podcast, a production of Inside.com. This is our weekly podcast where we discuss transportation trends that you need to know about to stay ahead of the curve. My name is Johan Marino, and I'm the writer of the Inside Transportation and Inside Electric Vehicles newsletters. And I'm joined here by my co-host, angel investor, podcaster, the man you'll never find at an Equinox gym.
Never.
Inside.com CEO, Jason Calcanis. How's it going, Jason?
It's going really well. I don't understand. I heard in New York people pay $250 a month, $200 a month to be part of Equinox. And if you just do the math, over 10 years, it's $20,000, $25,000. You should literally buy a Tonal, buy a Peloton, maybe the robot. I have the Peloton tread, and I got the Tonal system. And I just did the math on it. Like, these things usually cost like $2,000 or $3,000 for these at-home systems, and they're so advanced and they're so much better than going to the gym.
But you can't get seen. You know what I mean? Like, there's a whole gym scene that some people like pay to go to these gyms just to be seen, especially Equinox. That's what I've heard. But speaking of working out, it looks like more gyms are reopening around the country as we head back into normalcy. But also, Jason, did you see that Las Vegas had its grand reopening last weekend as well?
So scary.
Yeah. So some visitors in Las Vegas are actually having trouble finding reliable transportation options as the city reopens. So I saw this really interesting article. It was from a Fox affiliate in Las Vegas, where basically, so all the casinos and resorts reopened last Friday. So that'd be Friday, June 5th. And one viral video showed visitors packing casinos, and we'll share that video in the show notes. But those who visited the city reported having trouble finding taxi, Uber, and Lyft rides, as some visitors resorted to hitching rides with random strangers off the street. There's like some stories, you know, somebody was looking for like an Uber, they couldn't find an Uber, they couldn't find a taxi, and somebody just drove by them and said, "Pay me $15, I'll take you back to your hotel." So it's gotten to that point.
Right.
At least one Las Vegas-based driver said the lack of passengers is one reason why, you know, drivers haven't returned to the field. Other drivers fear that the initial comeback will be hampered by a second wave, or business will be inconsistent, and it's a risk they're unwilling to take. The reason why is because a lot of these drivers were able to, you know, be eligible for unemployment benefits when ride demand basically went to zero. Like many load-paid workers in our economy right now, they're getting an extra $600 a week, so they're probably making more than they would if they were driving. And it doesn't look like Congress is going to renew those benefits, and those benefits are going to end in late July. So my question to you is, what do you think Uber, Lyft, and taxi companies can do to get ahead of this and convince some drivers back on the road? I know it's kind of an unsafe environment right now. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, listen, this is the first time we're in a pandemic in our lifetimes, and at least here in the United States. And I think we're all adjusting to exactly what is the risk and what level of risk are we willing to take. And so for a cab driver, taxi driver, ride-sharing driver, you got to think they're doing at least two or three rides an hour. They were working, what, 8-10-hour shifts? So just back of the envelope, right, they're doing 20, 30 rides, which means they're exposing themselves to, let's say it's 1 to 2 people per ride. So if they did 30 rides and there was 1.5 in each ride, they're exposing themselves to 45 people. Now they're in the back seat. It's short exposure, so that's good based on everything we know. Mm-hmm. Windows open, wearing a mask on both sides of the equation, hopefully. That lowers the risk, cleaning the car. So perhaps the risk is actually not that great, but we don't know that, right? And so we are taking an experimental approach here in America. to the reopening.
Yes.
And we have to understand that not everybody is going to want to participate in that experiment. I am not getting on a commercial flight, I decided, this year. If one of my friends has got a private jet, is going somewhere, and they want to take me for a ride, I might consider that.
But would you get into an Uber or a Lyft?
I have. I think I took one during quarantine. And so I think it's a relatively safe behavior. I'm no doctor, but I think in a short trip, the person's in the front seat, you're in the back seat, you're probably distanced by a couple of feet. The windows are a couple of feet. The windows are open, so you're getting air circulation. I think you're in okay shape, but, you know, again, this is like, we don't have leadership at the top telling us wear a mask. Like, we haven't even gotten to that simple point. So every American is going to have to assess this for themselves. And I think that's why we're seeing an unclear, messy situation on return. Here in San Francisco, we're still sheltered in place. New York's going back. You know, nobody can make sense of this. Some places never, you know, went into like full shelter in place.
They never did, yeah.
And so who the heck knows? I think we're starting to understand that being outside is low risk. Being inside in a closed environment, close to each other, like a restaurant, like a classroom, like a church, perhaps like a poker room or a casino. Like, these are the high risk activities. But
yes,
it's incredibly disturbing, but Americans are very free-loving people. It's very ingrained that we're risk-takers from, you know, going west and the gold rush or even coming to this country. And, you know, Australians are the same way.
American promise, yeah.
And, you know, Australians are the same way. You know, like, we're risk-takers, right? And so I am very curious to see what happens, you know. I would not be going to a casino. Yeah. That is the craziest thing I've ever seen because they're inside.
I'm so concerned after watching those videos because no one's wearing masks. Nobody's social distancing in those casinos. No. It looks like business as usual. But one positive, if you're just looking for it from a purely economic standpoint, it looks like we're recovering faster than we expected from COVID. I wouldn't have thought so many people would be willing to go out to casinos just by observing, because in my area, restaurants reopened pretty early, right? I've never seen so many people wanting to dine out.
It's pent up demand. I mean, we're human beings, we're social creatures. And for people under the age of 50, you know, the statistics are with you. And people over 60, the statistics are not good. So I think it's going to be this bifurcation of society where young people and risk takers are going to go out and then people who are high risk are going to stay home. And the argument has been that that's what it should have been from the beginning, is that at-risk people should have quarantined and we shouldn't have crashed the economy and we shouldn't have gone trillions of dollars into debt. But, you know, we don't have great leadership in this country. We have a polarized country and this is the price we pay for it, is this feeling of chaos. The good news about having a 50-state union is that we are getting to see how New York solved the problem, how Northern California avoided it, and then what states are going up and to the right and have high viral coefficient. And then you have to layer all those different approaches against population statistics, like Italy's old people, or obesity statistics. Mm-hmm. People in Texas are obese in a major way, like on a percentage basis. No offense to Texas. It's just everything's big there. And so
everything's bigger in Texas.
Everything's bigger in Texas, including the people.
The donuts, the burgers, the
I went to San Antonio. It was, no offense to people in San Antonio, but they love to eat.
You're doing the Charles Barkley comment about women in San Antonio.
I didn't say women. I said people in San Antonio. And I do agree with him that Riverwalk is nasty. That is some dirty water. You don't want to fall into that Riverwalk. Woo!
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how, like, demand changes for Uber and Lyft.
It's going
to
come right back, by the way.
This month.
Yeah.
Right?
They're already. Yeah. I mean, and we talked about this on earlier issues about when it would come back. You know, Uber has the benefit of, and full disclosure, I'm a shareholder. Uber has the benefit of seeing what happened in Hong Kong or other countries, right, where Lyft doesn't. But everybody's starting to see demand come back. And so the drivers is the interesting thing. And this is where I think everybody needs to understand that actually America is a pretty great country when it, or, you know, we were hitting a really great point with our safety system. Because if unemployment is so good in our country that people don't feel the need to go back to work, well, that puts us ahead of a lot of other places in the world. I'm not saying it's where it needs to be. Mm-hmm. We still have the healthcare issues we need to work out, but it is pretty amazing that we're now in a position where people are choosing to not go back to work when they can because they want to have an abundance of caution. That says those drivers are somewhat empowered for some period of time, at least, right?
Yeah, at least until July. But I still think ride-hailing companies have to do something to protect drivers, right? And one idea, I mean, obviously, we've been seeing a lot of, like, plexiglass partitions. I think those have to be a must in all ride-hailing vehicles and taxis and stuff like that. Professional-grade cleaning. Because I went to my local car wash, and they have, like, a special treatment that they can do to cars to kind of remove, like, all the viruses and stuff like that.
But now they're saying you can't get it off surfaces, right? So I don't know about you, but I'm, like, wiping down every single package into the house. And they're like, yeah, maybe that's not. So, like, WHO has got this fancy title, and they're like, yeah, you don't need masks. And it's like, yeah, masks are the number one thing that stopped the spread of this. Okay.
Right. And then they kind of flubbed that comment this week, too, about, people who don't have any symptoms, they're not spreading it.
I very rarely agree with Trump on anything, but he might happen to be right that the WHO is clueless and they are not good communicators, and they seem to be a partisan organization in some way, because saying that you shouldn't wear masks was such a dumb take, and everybody's like, are you dumb? Like, every country that seems to be dealing with this is wearing masks. It's so obvious that masks work.
Nobody wants to wear a mask. Nobody over
it's
here
men.
Is wearing masks anymore.
Really? Oh, I saw a direct correlation. Every woman I saw in my area, in the Bay Area, when I went out with my daughter, I took her out to get ice cream and then boba. We did back-to-back desserts, double dessert. It was pretty fun. And we actually took the Tesla Roadster, the old one, the 16th one ever made. So we call it, it's orange. It was the first orange one ever made. So we call her Orangina. My daughter named her. So I took my 10-year-old out for double dessert and Orangina, which
That's
she loves.
Great.
And, we couldn't go into the store. She had to order from an app. They brought it out to you. You weren't allowed in. Everybody was social distance outside. Check, check, check. That was great. The only problem was, five guys with no masks walk right up to the boba place and they're laughing and cavorting. And I'm like, guys, what is going on here? And one of them was massively obese and definitely, 50 or 60 years old. And I'm like, and then literally, I kid you not, Johan, every woman wore a mask and had their kids in masks. So there's some stupid thing with guys being macho about not wearing masks. And you wear the mask to show that you love me and you don't want to get me or my children or my family sick. I wear the mask to show you I love and care for you and I don't want to get you sick. It's not about your ego. Wear your goddamn mask, people.
You know what they respond? They're like, oh, but I'm healthy. I don't need to be
wearing
a mask.
Oh my God, it's so dumb. It's literally like the STD discussions in the 80s. They're like, I know this person. They can't have HIV. It's like, did you really just say that? You know them.
You don't know.
Really?
Yeah.
You know them. And that's how you know they don't have HIV. Okay. Like literally, that's what people would say. I was 15 years old, 16 years old, 1985, 1986, in the middle of that. And people were saying stuff like that. And I was like, probably still want to use protection.
Crazy.
But I think it's going to be a quick rebound, obviously. And I'm pretty bullish on it. I think the social distancing and the masks are, and again, I'm no doctor, but my theory is social distancing plus masks, plus keeping the high-risk places closed or distanced, like churches, anywhere you're indoors closed for more than half an hour or something. I think if those are eliminated, I think the spread goes under the one, so it's not virally spreading on like a very quick basis. And then with sustained testing, you're going to know if there's a flare up and then those areas can pull back. So I feel like I feel like the summer is going to be a lot of education, and these people who go to Vegas are going to get it. Those people who are in the pool, remember that picture of the pool in the Ozarks that went viral?
Yes, the Ozarks in like Missouri, right?
Yeah, somebody said nobody. Okay. And I just saw the headline, so I don't know if this is true, they said nobody in that pool has gotten corona since then. And it's been whatever, a week or two since then. So Who knows? Outdoors might, it just might be that outdoors with wind, you're just not getting exposed enough. Even if 10 people in an outdoor area have it, it might be that you just don't get that amount of exposure to actually get it into your lungs and your nose.
Yes. Yeah. Moving things along here, one publicly traded zero emission vehicle startup has caught the attention of investors. And we'll be talking about that when we come back from break here on the Inside Transportation Podcast. Stay tuned.
Hey, everybody, just want to let you know that this episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by our friends at the Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy. Ford has one simple goal, and that's to improve the mobility of its customers. Ford has been using technology to shape the future of transportation for over 100 years and is dedicated to solving the world's most pressing mobility issues. What you might not know is that Ford has a series of divisions that make these visions a reality. Ford X is Ford's venture incubator that unites entrepreneurs, designers, and engineers to shape the future of transportation. Ford's City Innovations team brings innovative ideas to life through community workshops, crowdsourcing initiatives, and citywide mobility challenges. And Spin, a property of Ford, brings e-scooter sharing to cities and college campuses. So here's your call to action. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. Thanks again to Ford for sponsoring independent media like this podcast.
And we're back here on the Inside Transportation Podcast. Johan Marino, Jason Calcanis talking about the week's hottest transportation topics. One publicly traded zero-emission vehicle startup has caught the attention of investors. Nikola Motors went public on June 3rd, opening at $33. But the stock surged this week to $65, as Tesla's stock also passed the $1,000 threshold per share. Nikola is going to produce hydrogen and electric semi-trailer trucks and is expected to go into production and sales next year. Oddly enough, Tesla CEO Elon Musk said yesterday he was going to accelerate production of the Semi. Keep this in mind. Tesla Semi cost about $150,000. Nikola's $350,000 semi-trailer truck runs on hydrogen, which is hydrogen, and is way more expensive than, you know, Tesla's offering, which is obviously an electric, you know, offering that runs off of, it uses four different Model 3 motors, actually. So what I thought was interesting, though, is that the market is very excited about electric vehicles, but it's also very interesting because I think they're thinking there's going to be multiple players in the zero-emission vehicle space. So Jason, how do you think the market for zero emission vehicles is going to play out? Do you think that we're just going to be seeing one major player like Tesla take the whole field, or do you think there's going to be a lot of room to coexist? I know you had said with autonomous vehicles that there was going to be, you know, many players or space for many players in the field. But what are you seeing as far as for the vehicle space? And if you have any comments on Nikola, because I know it's been a big topic of conversation on Twitter this week.
Yeah, so there is some weird stuff going on in the stock market right now that some people are speculating could be pumping and dumping. So there is a Reddit called Wall Street Bets, I believe. And then you may have seen the president of Barstool Sports started becoming a day trader. He's going crazy, like betting. And I think his credo is all stocks go up. Now, he happened to start his day trading in the middle of, you know, a global recession when, you know, this pandemic happened. So, you know, and there was this big V-shaped recovery. So I think he's having fun with it and just being silly. But there's this group of Robinhood traders, right? Robinhood, which I'm an investor in as well, in early round too. It's been a great investment for us. But they have a new cohort of young people who like to buy one share or 10 shares or options. And instead of gambling on sports, they're gambling on stocks. And then like the ICO craze, the cryptocurrency coin offerings, I think what we're seeing is that same behavior is moving into stocks. And so you're seeing weird behaviors where crowds of people go into a stock because it's promoted somewhere or because it gets a little bit of discussion around it and enthusiasm.
Because it gets the Jim Cramer treatment or something like that, right?
Well, I think Jim Cramer's would always be looking at fundamentals and cares about his reputation. I think in this case, it's people who are from anonymous accounts on a Reddit, or who knows if it's on a WhatsApp group or a, you know, a Telegram group or a Signal group, that kind of stuff. So I think, like the ICO craze, there are some people pumping and dumping and just making wild, crazy speculative bets. And this would, this Nikola falls into that category for me, because if they've never sold a car before and you gave them a $28 billion market cap, let's just pause on that. It's double, I believe that's double Domino's. I believe that's more than Airbnb. That's,
it's more than Ford.
Yeah. It's so dumb. Yeah. It's so dumb. Well, I mean, Ford might have a lot of liabilities, right, with their pension and stuff like that. It might have a lot of debt. So it's, you know, you have to be sort of careful with these things. But, you know, the market cap should, in a way, net all that out because people are placing a bet. So this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen, to your point. And these people who bought at the peak are all going to lose their money, almost certainly, in my mind. People who bought it at $50, $60, $70 is trading at $66 as we're taping this. I mean, it's so dumb. It is so unbelievable.
I'm not going to give any stock. I'm not going to give any stock advice, but wow.
Well, here's the advice I would give you. If the company doesn't sell a product yet, you might want to wait. You might want to wait before you buy the stock.
Well, also the CEO of this company, Nikola Motor CEO Trevor Milton, said he's one of the very few people that can out Elon. And the reason why he said that was because he believes that their technology is more specialized for the commercial trucking space than the semi. And, you know, I think that's what kind of sparked Elon's, imagination, or, you know, he was like, we're going to start making the semi now. Because I think they had delayed it to 2021. He's like, let's ramp up the semi. We need to get this out.
Yeah, and a little competition is good. And let me tell you something. You know, obviously, I'm personal friends with Elon. Like, that is not somebody you want to be in a competition with. And you could just see what happened to the short sellers in Tesla, right? Like, you know, when those short sellers started attacking him and they made it really personal and brutal, like, that's like poking the tiger. Like, you know, tigers sit there and, like, you know, they look kind of cute. You might want to, like, cuddle with them. And then you poke them a couple times.
Yeah.
And all they got to do is take one swipe at you and you're done. Like, those are big goddamn paws. Yeah. And, you know, Elon's going to just, he'll get that truck out and it'll be so transcendent that he will roll right over Nikola Corp. I my guess is in 5 years, this company does not exist. That's my best guess. 5 years from now, this company, Nikola Corporation, is Fisker. Does not exist.
I mean, the thing is, they're running two different platforms. They're running a battery electric platform and a hydrogen fuel cell platform.
Yeah, okay.
And
has anybody made hydrogen cells work? Does that exist?
No. Toyota has what? So Toyota's been banking on hydrogen fuel cell technology. But the problem
is that, going for them?
That you don't have the fueling stations.
Of course not.
Right? I think the only state in the country that has enough fueling stations is California. And I can count them on my fingers.
And then think about battery technology. Every one of us has bought 10 smartphones in the last 15 years, at least. Every one of us has bought a couple of laptops. All of that battery technology, all of that optimization is now, and all of that cost and scale is now going into vehicles. And obviously Elon's been doing it, you know, and on the margins, other companies. All that battery technology, all that enthusiasm behind batteries, all those advances are going to just keep compounding. And hydrogen, come on. What product do you, I mean, is your phone running off that? Of course not. So I think the batteries win the day. Solar wins the day. It's just obviously all coming together exactly as Elon, you know, predicted. And I don't think it took a genius to figure out this is where we're going. I just think it took relentless execution. But this is just one of these bizarre moments in time where, you know, stocks get out of control. And they're just riding on Tesla's coattails. And my guess is this is an absolute zero. That's my guess. I don't give people stock advice, but if my mom or dad or brothers came to me and said, should I buy this? I would literally grab them by their jacket lapels and shake them and be like, no, no,
well,
buy Disney.
I do think that Yeah.
Buy Uber.
I do think Tesla, though, if you think about it, this is going to be a two-horse race with zero-emission vehicles. It's going to be Tesla versus everyone else. It's going to be like Apple versus Android, right? You're going to have a ton of automakers.
Who's the number two automaker in terms of... Who's the number two automotive manufacturer in terms of batteries and electric cars in the market?
It's Chevrolet right now.
Yeah.
So GM.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how close are they to catching up with Elon?
Not even close.
Not even close.
Not even close. Yeah. But you're going to see like Volkswagen, Toyota, Ford, they're going to join together. They're going to create like a joint operating system that can run on all the vehicles. And then they're going to share like a network of chargers that's very, you know, similar to Tesla's supercharger network. Because there's no way the market can develop this on an individual basis for it to be viable. And then also Tesla changed the game with superchargers. So what are you going to do? You're going to offer an inferior product with an inferior charging network. Eventually, like all these automakers are going to realize that they have to join together in order to be able to even hold.
I also think
the
supercharger stations are going to go through a... I think they're going to be less necessary as Tesla start to hit 400 miles. They're just like, when you hit 400 miles, I think a lot of trips are going to just be unnecessary to hit them, you know? Like, you're just not going to have to stop for a lot of trips. You know, you start getting to like 5-hour trips, you know, it's like, well, I guess I don't need to stop. You know, you're already at a three. You can do it in a 3-hour. You can do a 3-hour trip, no problem. 4-hour trip, no problem. It's the 5-6-hour trips where you have to stop once or twice, so. I'm bullish on it.
Yes.
I would be amazing I think Elon could be talked into making the supercharger a standard for other vehicles. And then he would just let people charge along theirs. So that would be actually really great. I think if I was the other auto manufacturers, I'd say, hey, Elon, would you be willing? Because remember he put the patents and he open sourced the patents at some point. If you use our patents, just you can't sue us kind of situation. I think if other car companies said, hey, would you let us make the standard supercharger and, you know, give that as a gift to the world and then other people can make supercharging stations? That would be amazing. You know, imagine if the supercharger
network...
I know
a lot of OEMs.
Oh, it'd be so amazing.
I know some executives for OEMs and they're not going to let that happen because they just hate Elon. I mean, it's the best thing for consumers. It's the best thing for the market.
Yeah.
It's the smartest thing to do, but they're not going to let it happen. Because that's like throwing in the towel to Tesla at that point, which is crazy. Moving along here, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to talk about a European delivery company that's on the heels of acquiring Grubhub, stealing it away from Uber when we come back on the Inside Transportation Podcast.
Yeah. Hey, everybody, let me take a moment to thank Fenwick and West. They're one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and life sciences. They operate in the fast lane of innovation where ideas often outpace changes in the law. That's where you find Fenwick's autonomous transportation and shared mobility practice, steering startups, technology giants, and major automotive companies through rapidly evolving legal, business, and regulatory challenges, which we talk about here on Inside Transportation all the time. A Silicon Valley original, Fenwick is a national law firm with offices in Mountain View, San Francisco, Seattle, New York, Santa Monica, and even Shanghai. So here's your call to action. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at fenwick.com. That's FENWICK.com. Thanks again to Fenwick for providing great legal services to me. I use them personally for our investments and for supporting independent media like Inside Transportation. Let's get back to this amazing episode.
And we're back here on the Inside Transportation Podcast. Johan Marino, Jason Calcanis. So, JustEatTakeaway.com.
Who?
Now, these were two different... this is the delivery giant in Europe. They were previously two companies. One was called Just Eat. The other one, Takeaway.com. They merged in April. And now they're close to reaching a deal to acquire Grubhub in the U.S. So weeks after rumors circulated that Uber was going to acquire Grubhub, another player... European delivery giant Just Eat Takeaway is close to reaching a deal with Grubhub. The all-stock transaction between the companies may be finalized as soon as today. Just Eat confirmed advanced talks with Grubhub. You know the Grubhub Just Eat deal is real when the Uber's board is planning to meet today to pull the plug on any discussions with you know, Grubhub on a merger. So talks were apparently bogged down by antitrust issues. Grubhub reportedly wanted a breakup fee if the U.S. government blocked the deal, as some politicians criticized a potential merger. So, Jason, this is crazy. We all thought this deal was going to go through for Uber. We thought we were going to see them shoot up as the, you know, taking up 50% of market share in some cases. So what's next for Uber after this? I mean, do they consolidate their operations? Do they double down on what they're doing? What do you kind of see happening in the U.S. delivery market with this?
Yeah, so I don't think it impacts the U.S., right? As much as, well, I think that Just Eats is a smaller company, so I don't know that this is the best deal for the Grubhub shareholders. I think Uber was offering a better deal, and you'd probably want to hold Uber shares. And I guess this is more like a merger, because I believe that Just Eats Takeaway is got a pretty low market cap itself, and it's down on this news, and Grubhub is down at this news. So that's usually a pretty good indicator that, you know, the people are kind of disappointed in that. And I'm also curious why Grubhub is so quick to want to sell, right? That's another, Grubhub is actually up slightly 6% after hours to $59, but it's been higher previously. And I guess they have a $5 billion market cap. So, it's a little bit of a bummer that, you know, I think it would have been good for Uber to become, you know, the lead candidate, but I'm still obviously long Uber. And I think it's smart for Uber to walk away if they think that they're going to wind up paying some giant, breakup fee. Like, let's say the breakup fee was $1 billion or something. If they think it's a 50% chance of that, well, that's, you know, a decent amount of money to put at risk. Why not just put that into building your business? And so I think it was very a nice true. Acquisition. I mean, I would rather see like Uber buy Domino's, you know, that would be like a better position for me. I'd like to see them do something creative like that. Right.
I have one question for you, though, as an investor, because, you know, you've been doing this for a while. What's one potential merger you saw almost get put together, but was ultimately folded, that you can talk about?
Oh, yeah. Well, you can't talk about too many of them. But I think that there was the one that I thought was obviously the most interesting, that there was a time that Google and Apple were courting or maybe dancing around Tesla. And that would have been the ultimate power play. Yeah. I mean, that's been public. And I publicly wrote that Apple should buy Tesla for $75 billion. I wrote that 5 or 6 years ago. People laughed at me when I wrote that. And now look.
It's a steal now.
Yeah, that would have been half price. And, you know, the problem is when you buy one of these things, you have to pay a premium. So you have to pay, you know, 10, 20, 30% more. And so, yeah, it's a bit problematic. So, yeah. But, you know, life goes on. I don't think this was like this isn't a make or break it kind of situation. And I think Uber's well positioned, so.
Yeah, I think this European company is going to have a really tough time if they're planning to get into the U.S. market. You're going into a pit of snakes. You're going to be dealing with DoorDash, which owns 35% of the market, Uber Eats, Postmates, all these different companies. I just don't understand it.
Yep.
I really don't. So closing out this episode, we're going to do a quick dope or nope.
Oh,
so this company called Priestman Good has created a prototype for a removable bike rack that can be installed on a train to help keep social distance between riders. We're going to put the image of this on the show notes. But Jason, do you think this is dope or nope? I think it's pretty dope.
Super dope.
You see that
it's obviously
the positioning
dope of
the bikes. Oh man, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I hope
lots of creative solutions like this should be happening, because, you know, the subway, I think my personal theory on what happened in New York is that so many people are on the subway, and the subway is so dense. And so we talked about this previously, so many people get on and off the subway. So you got people on the subway for probably like half an hour to an hour on each in most instances. You've got them going 10, you know, 5 to 10 subway stops. It's closed. It's underground. There's no air circulation. There's no sun.
Yeah.
Like, it's the perfect Petri dish, and so many people cycling on and off that, I have a feeling coronavirus and the pandemic spread in New York in large part because of the subway. That was definitely a contributing factor. And that's why maybe in the South where people are just naturally socially distanced. So this is a great idea. So dope. And they should really be looking at all of these. They need to do something for public transportation in the next year. And then if the pandemic lifts, we should still be thinking about it. And that's one of the nice things about a crisis is that it lets everybody reevaluate the long term. And you have to make changes in the short term, but then you start evaluating the long term. And the long term change here might be people working swing shifts or coming to the office 3 days a week and working from home 2 days a week. Maybe people coming in early and leaving earlier. Maybe people working, some number of people working on the weekends, but they got to lower the number of people this year and into next on each subway car, right?
Yeah. One idea I was going to run by you real quick before we end this podcast. So I was reading something this week saying that like HEPA filters, I think we actually talked about this in a few episodes ago, but HEPA filters can actually extract all viruses from cabin air in airplanes. So I was thinking, why don't we add that plus social distancing, free middle seats in airplanes and masks, and we create like outdoor airport terminals. Like on the, like somewhere on the runway,
like old school, like when you go to Hawaii, it's like that, right? Like
yes, that's
yeah. No, anytime you go to some thinking, like, small
Long
island,
Beach
you go to the
airport.
Yeah,
you know?
Long Beach is great. Just open everything up. I agree. We have all these great spaces. Open them up. Let people hang out instead of in the terminal. Let them hang out on the runway.
Like how awesome would that be if there could be such a thing as an outdoor airport? Like if we see that being outside doesn't really spread the virus, I mean, I feel like that opens up so many opportunities, and I think we'll learn more as the weeks go on to see, you know, how the virus spreads in the U.S. But just a thought I had this week that I wanted to share with you.
Is it confirmed that coronavirus wouldn't go through a HEPA filter?
So they haven't found exact evidence, but with most viruses, the HEPA filter actually filters it out. They're still researching whether, you know, how coronavirus is spreading on airplanes. But it, like I heard there's more risk at the actual airport terminal than there is inside of the airplane, which is really interesting.
Wait, why is that?
Because I think most people, it's just the amount of surfaces and just the amount of people that are all together in an airport terminal versus the HEPA filter, which is like filtering out air every like 2 minutes, 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So I'll leave it at that.
I'm not getting on a plane. Like I said, I don't, are you, would you get on a plane this year? 2020?
Yes.
You would?
Yes. Yes.
What would you do? You double your N95 mask and wear goggles and look ridiculous?
You know,
like
I have a face
Nassim
shield.
Taleb
I'll wear a face
was,
shield.
wearing goggles.
I have these face shields that I've been wearing out and about, and it's actually, I mean, it makes me feel pretty confident about going out, you know? I have the mask on, face shield on, gloves on, boom. Hand sanitizer, boom, boom.
Put in the show notes, Nassim Taleb, I think I'm pronouncing it, or Talib, Taleb, I think it is. He shows a photo of himself on his Twitter, and he did it on June 7th. Now on planes, I wear two masks plus goggles. Plus N95 when there's a crowd, and he like literally shows himself and he looks completely ridiculous, but he's wearing ski goggles basically sealed over his eyes because they think that coronavirus goes into your eyes.
And
he's just wearing a double surgical mask and he's wearing that. And yeah.
Well, the beauty of the face shield is that the face shield covers your eyes. And then if anyone's like spitting on you while they're talking, it actually blocks it.
Yeah, see,
so
that's the thing I always
I would
get.
Recommend.
People come to me in every event I've ever been to. They get in my face. They want to take a selfie, and I'm totally cool with that. I love having fans on my podcast. Like, I'm talking about startup events, not like reality. But and I can't tell you how many times people come up to me, and they have no sense of personal space, and they get closer and closer to block other people from talking to me so they can get 100% of my attention. And they get within 12 inches of my face. And it's like, if we both leaned in just a couple inches, we could kiss. And they're talking to me. And then it happens. A little bit of spittle goes right in my eye or my face. And then I got to make the decision. Do I wipe my face and the spit off my face and make them feel uncomfortable for spitting in my face, which I always do. And they're like, oh my God, I'm sorry, I spit
in
your face.
And the next question is, do you invest?
Exactly.
Do you invest?
Anyway, everybody just keep some goddamn space. And then, you know, some of these people have no sense of it. You step back. And they're walkers. They walk in. It's like the Walking Dead. You step back, they walk forward. And I'm just like, did you not get the signal that I took a giant step back? So there's a little personal space. I don't want to put my hand out and be aggressive and be like, hey, can you give me personal space? But I think I have to now going forward, just, you know, more personal space. Yes. Please, everybody. Don't
crowd
people.
Stay away from
people.
Jason, everyone.
No, come Please. Say hi. Come say hi. But I mean, fist bump, elbow bump, no hugs.
I'm doing elbow bumps from now on. Elbow bumps, that's going to be my thing. No handshakes, please. I'm over the handshake.
I stopped handshaking a long time ago. I carry a phone in one hand. I carry a cup of coffee in the other. Nobody can shake my hand. And when they come up to shake my hand, I'm like, oh, okay, elbow. And they're just like, okay, great. Nobody feels bad about it. All right. Yeah,
there you go.
This has been great.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. Take care.